I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello everyone, and welcome to Minute 95 of Season 6 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Travis Bowe of the upcoming Minute of Thieves. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Hello there. Thank you.
Hello there. You sound like we're Document 94 or something.
I know. 94.
well, we just passed 94. We're just moving over to 95.
94.
If you look back a little bit, you'll be able to see 94 behind you.
94.
Hey, wait, what are the stormtroopers running into that Document 94 doing?
94.
Exactly. So minute 95 begins with George showing he's got a policy, and ends with Potter starting to get a little bit legal. So yesterday we spent the day talking about having George and Potter having an interesting conversation about what George really needs and why he believes that Potter's the only one who can deliver. And
yeah,
that episode really, that minute really showed us who Potter is. You know, he's a real bastard. That's what it comes down to. And today we're going to continue with that. So what George said yesterday was, I have some life insurance, a $15,000. And today he says the word policy. You know, he's got a $15,000 policy. And Potter, always the businessman, responds, yeah, but how much is your equity in it? So do you know anything about economics or anything like that?
Not as much as I probably should.
Okay, I fit into that category too.
Okay.
So the only thing I know about equity is that when I looked it up, because I wouldn't know it otherwise. So equity in finance is an ownership interest in property that may be offset by debts or other liabilities. Equity is measured for accounting purposes by subtracting liabilities from the value of the assets owned. For example, if someone owns a car worth $24,000 and owes $10,000 on a loan used to buy the car, the difference of $14,000 is the equity. Okay, so equity can apply to a single asset, such as a car, a house, or to an entire business. A business that needs to start up or expand its operations can sell its equity in order to raise cash that does not have to be repaid on a set schedule. So basically what Potter is saying here, that, okay, you have a $15,000 policy, but how much have you already put into it?
Yeah.
In order to, you know, like what is it really worth?
Right.
And so he answers it's worth $500. You know, that's what I've put into it.
So then how are people opening life insurance policies on people, you know, and then, you know, taking them out and getting all that life insurance money? If, 'cause I thought, like, once you opened it, then if that person dies, then you get all that money. How does life insurance fraud work,
right,
Rob? That's what I'm here for.
How does life insurance fraud?
Yeah.
How does the fraud work?
Yeah, well, you know,
I don't know if I know how the fraud works. I mean, basically the idea is that you pay a monthly fee in order for it to keep going, that you're hoping that one day you're never going to have to, want that money back.
Yeah.
Obviously, one day you will, but or someone will, you won't. And when I guess when you talk about like medical insurance, that type of thing,
Yeah.
that or car insurance, that's money that you're paying with the hope that you'll never need to really ever use it,
Right.
never need it. But I guess with life insurance is a little different because there hasn't really from what I know, there hasn't been anyone who's been able to prove that they've been able to beat the system.
Yeah.
There's nobody who's gotten out of the world alive. That's what it comes down to. We're all there.
Yeah.
So the idea is that okay, every month you're paying a certain amount, and if and when you die, or when you die, then the insurance has to pay up what's left. But the
Yeah.
question is how much have you already put in? I think that's what it is. So that's the question, I guess, of the difference here.
Yeah.
As opposed to how much have you put in? So how much will you be making on that, basically?
Right.
I think that's what it comes down to.
Huh.
Because maybe you can borrow on part of it, so therefore
Yeah.
it would be worth even less. That's my understanding. If there's anyone out there who's listening that actually understands these things and wants to try and explain it, feel free. Because I know nothing about
Yeah.
economics. I had an economics class in 10th grade. I hated it, and that was it. And I stay as far away from economics and math as I can.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my day job does not include either of those, so I'm fine. And the equity of $500. We talked yesterday about how much the $15,000 is worth.
Yeah.
We said that that's about $257,000. The $500 is $8,500. So comparatively, that's not much at all.
Yeah, I guess yeah, this whole thing. I think I'm so used to life insurance policies are such a thing in movies when it comes to like, oh, I've taken out a insurance policy in this person's name, and then
I kill them and I take the money. Right. Double indemnity and indem in double indemnity. Yeah, that's true. That's still that you're right. That is the only way you think of life insurance policies in movies when someone is killed. So okay, yeah, it makes sense. But Potter is completely thrown off by the fact that he says that he only has $500 equity because he goes, $500? And you ask me to lend you $8,000? Look at you. You used to be so cocky. You were going to go out and conquer the world. So first of all, I love the fact that Potter and other people in the movie also, they know George's dream. George talks to everybody about his dream. Apparently he's somehow it's gotten up to Potter also, that this is his dream.
Well, because so many people at the start knew he was going to go traveling, before starting college, and I guess he just made his aspirations known.
Yeah, correct.
So,
He's like, I'm gonna get out of this place.
yeah, it,
And then,
yeah.
20, 20, 28 years later, he's still there. Or 38 years later. And then I'm very impressed by the fact that Potter is able to recall something that George once said to him. Because then he says, you
Oh,
once
yeah.
called me a warped, frustrated old man. What are you but a warped, frustrated young man? So, I mean, it's a great that he's able to quote what George threw at him in 1928. So this was 17 years earlier. George said this after his father died. Calling Potter a warped, frustrated old man. And it says so much about Potter that it's been ingrained in his mind for 17 years that this cocky little kid, called me a warped, frustrated old man. And he's still hanging on to that insult, basically.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, he's been just biding his time, hoping for a chance to take George
that's
down.
right. But what's funny is he says, "But you, what are you, but a warped, frustrated young man?" That's not as insulting. It
Yeah.
doesn't sound as insulting.
No, right.
It's like, you called me a warped or another man, but you're just a
Although,
young warped. And it's like it's like a very strange comeback that someone would say. Like in Star Trek 4, where he says you're a dumbass, and he goes, "Well, double dumbass to you too." It sounds to me that same type of
right.
thing. It's.
Okay. There's a part of it though that's like, well, yeah, I'm already old and frustrated, but you're young and you're already frustrated and warped and everything. So it's like you have a lot more time to be miserable. Like your misery is just starting and you've got a lot more life. I think that's kind of what
Oh
he's saying.
wow. Okay,
Like
I didn't think about it from that perspective.
I'm at the end of my road, but you're, 40 years younger and already as miserable as me, basically. I
Wow,
don't
no, I never thought about it from that perspective. That's right. You can see it from that perspective too. It's not just a comeback. He's basically saying, "Look at you. You're
Yeah.
you think that I'm a warped
Yeah.
and frustrated old man. Think about it. You're a warped and frustrated young man." So, deal with it. And then he calls him a miserable little clerk,
Yeah.
crawling in here on your hands and knees and begging for help. I mean, that's very belittling by calling him a miserable little clerk.
Yeah.
I don't think many people would be happy being called that.
Right. This is such a good, like, most of this minute is just a villain monologue,
Yes.
from Potter. And it's funny because I've got the minute just playing on a loop with no dialogue or no audio, and the faces that Potter makes. Well, what was this? Oh, this is Lionel
Lionel Barrymore, yeah.
Barrymore. Yeah, just the face acting that this guy's doing is he's kind of a cartoon character.
Yeah, because he like squints his eyes
Yeah.
and he like scrunches. He has one eyebrow, much higher up than the other, and his gestures with his hands also as he's holding his glasses.
Yeah.
No securities, no stocks, no bonds, nothing but a miserable little $500 equity and a life insurance policy. And then he says something that's so integral to the rest of this movie. He goes, "You're worth more dead than
Right.
alive."
Yeah. Which gets a great reaction
From Lurch?
from
Oh, from
George.
George. Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that
So I think
George wasn't contemplating suicide before he says this little thing here?
I kind of think this is what gives him the idea, because at this point he probably thought that Potter was probably going to help him out, and maybe now he's realizing that Potter's not going to help him, and that now he's out of options. And until Potter said worth more dead than alive, then yeah, I think maybe this is the first instance where he's considering suicide.
Right. I mean, it's an interesting thing because, George is basically willing to sell his soul to the devil here.
Yeah.
And because he pisses off the devil doesn't want to have anything to do with him.
Right.
Because there's no reason why Potter couldn't have given him the money if he really wanted to.
Yeah. And on one hand, Potter could have then owned him,
That's right.
essentially just really, but yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Potter isn't willing to do that. Maybe he just would rather just break him now than extend his torture.
Right. Do you think that Potter notices the spark in George's eyes when he says to him about the fact that you're worth more dead than alive, maybe he's actually pushing him towards that once he realizes that that's maybe a possibility.
Maybe.
Because he's reached a point where he really doesn't want to help George. So maybe it has to do with the fact that he's saying, hey, I don't have to help George. George is gonna, get rid of himself here, and then I'll still get the building and loan, and I don't need to be a nice guy. I don't know. And then Potter says, well, why don't you go to that riffraff you love so much and ask them to let you have the $8,000? Do you know what riffraff is?
I mean, I know it's meant just the I feel like it's more like down and out sort of crowd of just general population. I don't know.
Well, what I understand from when I looked it up, riffraff basically just means commoners. But it's a derogatory way to refer to commoners.
Sounds right.
Then he answers his own question. He goes, you know why? Because they'd run you out of town on a rail. But I tell you what I'm going to do for you, George. Since the state, and then he gets cut off. So now, have you ever heard that phrase before? Run out of town on a rail?
I have, and I looked it up, and I interpreted it incorrectly. So what it
Okay.
means is not what I thought it means. So I'm guessing you're gonna talk about what it means.
Well, what did you think it meant?
I thought it meant getting like basically forced to maybe hop on a train and escape town, you know. Basically
No,
being
it's well,
chased out
okay.
of
So it's
town, you know.
that's what it is. That's what it is. It was a punishment used in the 18th and 19th centuries in the US, in which an offender was made to straddle a fence rail held on the shoulders of two or more bearers, and then they were paraded down around town and taken to the city limits and dumped by the roadside. So basically, it was a way of taking them out of town. You have riding the rails, which means to freight hop.
But yeah, this I never thought it meant where the mob would, you know, make you ride, basically put you on a post, basically, and make you like taking you out of town. Like that whole the idea of like, yeah, I've seen some drawings of it where, you know, people were like straddling this post, you know, like I had no idea that it meant that. So
Right. No, I mean, basically, it's also the tarring and feathering someone,
yeah,
and then
but
chasing them out of town that way.
yeah.
So there are a few places in literature and popular culture that deal with this idea. So you have in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, there are two characters known as the King and the Duke, who are caught in the act of trying to swindle, and they are ridden out of town straddle a rail. After tarring and feathering them. So you get that. And in the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou,
Yeah,
which
that's the
was
one I
by
found.
the right, by the Coen brothers, right? So one of the characters denounces the Soggy Bottom Boys as hostile to the social order and accuses them of associating with African Americans. And then he reveals that he himself is a member of the Ku Klux Klan and makes everyone angry, and they end up tarring and feathering him and carrying him out of there. So yeah, not something so pleasant, I guess you can say. But it's an interesting phrase to have Potter use it. I mean, I love the writing in this movie. I think they do a great job of giving us some really, really interesting comments, that characters make that help bring the characters and the story more to life. Okay, you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Travis?
No, I'm this I didn't have a lot on this one, but because it was really just a almost a minute of great, villain monologue.
Yes. Okay. Is there anything you'll say about the movie in general that you haven't brought up yet?
I don't think so. I other than to say that I really am glad that I had the chance to watch it and give it another chance because I really enjoyed it. And yeah, it's a great movie.
All right. Great. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. And the idea here is in the 96 years that we've had the Oscars, so there's always a lot of controversy as to whether they made the right decisions or not. And everyone has their opinion on it. And the idea here is that my guests can discuss the five movies that they think were more deserving of winning Best Picture than the actual winners of those given years. Obviously, it must be something that was nominated for Best Picture, so you can't use Robin Hood.
Fine.
So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up? I
Okay.
hope you have five this time.
I do have
Anyway,
five.
okay, great.
I'll go with the oldest and work my way forward. And
Whatever you want.
I made sure to do movies like I did years where I have seen the winning the you know whatever won Best Picture, and because some of them, it's like I don't know what's better, than one that if I didn't see the winning picture, but these are at least
Right.
instances where I have seen, one in the list and whatever won. So in 1964, I would put Dr. Strangelove above My Fair Lady. I think Dr. Strangelove should have won that one. In 1977, I think Star Wars is better than Annie Hall. Then jumping all the way.
You, I'm surprised. I'm surprised. I knew you're a big Woody Allen fan.
Right. Jumping all the way to 2001, I would give Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, over Beautiful Mind. And then, let's see, 2005, I think Brokeback Mountain is much better than Crash. And then 2010, this is a tough one because 2010 you had Winter's Bone, True Grit, and 127 Hours. So I think all three of those I think are better than King's Speech. I'd probably give it to Winter's Bone because that one was like an early Jennifer Lawrence, and she is incredible in that movie. So I'd give it to that one.
Okay, great. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So, Travis, would you like for one final time this week to tell people where they can find Travis Bowe, all the different places that you can find Travis Bowe?
Sure. Well, like I said, I did Watchmen Minute. You can check that one out. My other podcast that is still ongoing, but kind of on hiatus at the moment, just like my other one, is Real Comic Heroes. And then the Movie by Minutes podcast I'm working on currently is Minute of Thieves, where I'm going through the Oscar snubbed Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, 1 minute at a time.
Hey, come on, come on. Do you think it would have had a chance of winning in 1991 against Silence of the Lambs?
No. Yeah,
I don't think Kevin Costner would have been able to beat Anthony Hopkins there either.
but
You know, and as
it's
much
better
as
than
I
like
like
Prince of Tides.
Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, that's true. Prince of Tides, the book Prince of Tides is amazing. I don't know if you've ever read it,
No.
but I remember I saw the movie and I really enjoyed the movie a lot. And then I read the book and I've never been able to watch the movie the same way ever again. After reading the book, I was like, oh, what a terrible movie. They got so much wrong. They skipped so much. There are things they should have done here. But oh well. That's the way these things work. Nothing we can do about that. Why, this is actually a good opportunity to talk about the Movies by Minute community. I like to do that every so often. So anyone who's likes this type of breakdown of a movie, and my assumption is if you're listening to this, you do like that. So, if you go to moviesbyminute.com, you can see a list of all the various all the hundreds of movies that have been that crazy people like me and Travis have decided to dissect minute by minute. And you can go there and you can find links to movies that you might love and want to take a deep dive into. Or as our good friend Jim O'Kano, he says, if you don't see the movie that you love there, you can go and make your own show. And there's a Facebook group for all of us Movies by Minute crazy people. And we all like to help others, help new people out when they want to try these things out. So many people have helped me. I can speak from a personal perspective on this, that over the seasons that I've been doing this, I've gotten a lot of help from a lot of different people in that forum. Many of them, like Travis, are even willing to come on my show and be guests. So that's always helpful too. And
Is a great community.
yes, it really is. And the community has get-togethers every year or two, depending on whether there's COVID or not. And Travis was the host of this year's meet in Indianapolis. So he from the pictures that I saw, you guys all seemed to have a great time. I was a little busy that day with other things going on in my country, but it looked like you guys all had a fun time. It's one of the things that I'm always unhappy about, that there are a lot of people that I've met while doing this over the last 6 seasons that I've never met in person. I've met one person in person. Sean is the only person that I was at his house. I was at Sean German's house, and we recorded in his, in his office. But as of today, there are currently 245 podcasts listed on the Movies by Minute website. Hopefully by the time when you're listening to this, there will be more. And like I said, go look there, look for some of your favorite movies. And if you don't find them, feel free to hop on board and take and join in and have fun like the rest of us. Finding me is very simple though. All you do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook and you can find me on Twitter. So normally I would say that I'll be back on Monday, but I'm actually doing something different starting on Sunday actually. So tomorrow there won't be an episode, but starting on Sunday for the for from Sunday until the end of this season, it will be a daily podcast. So you will have 7 days a week from now until the end of April.
Nice.
And then you can check out all the rest of the episodes all the way through April 28th. And then April 29th, the plan is to start season seven. So feel free to dive in, as they say. So I will be back on Sunday with another guest. But until then, hot
Hot
dog.
dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.